Join me in 1 John. I have my Bible open to the third chapter, verse 11, as we continue our walk through these letters written by, in this case, John, to the church in general. 1 John chapter 3, verse 11. This is the message you have heard from the beginning. We should love one another. Do not be like Cain, who belonged to the evil one and murdered his brother. And why did he murder him? Because his own actions were evil and his brothers were righteous. Do not be surprised, my brothers, if the world hates you. We know that we have passed from death to life because we love our brothers. Anyone who does not love remains in death. Anyone who hates his brother is a murderer, and you know that no murderer has eternal life in him. This is how we know what love is. Jesus Christ laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for our brothers. If anyone has material possessions and sees his brother in need but has no pity on him, how can the love of God be in him? Dear children, let us not love with words or tongue, but with actions and in truth. We will stop there. I pray the Lord would bless us with understanding. Here this morning on a very beautiful topic, loving one another. He says, this is the message you have heard from the beginning. What is the message that they have heard from the beginning? John makes it simple, brief here. He says we should love one another. Please know that that comes from the great commandment, which says love the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all of your soul, and with all of your mind. But it doesn't stop there. And Jesus says the other one is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. From the very beginning, from the very start of when we broached the book of John so many weeks ago, the message has been the same, and he's reiterated it time and time again. Love one another. But he has also repeatedly differentiated between two groups of people within this book. He's done it in many ways, time and time again. He's made a difference between darkness and light. Those who love and those who do not. Those who have the truth and those who do not. The children of the devil, as we spoke last week. And the children of God. Because you see, this difference that John speaks of reveals in reality who the people are. He is telling us that the actions of the people portray who they really are. He is speaking of their essence, but as you watch a person and their actions will reflect, will mirror, will reveal who they truly are by nature. If we are children of light, then we know the truth, we accept the truth, we live the truth through God's grace. We reflect Christ. But if we are children of the devil, if we are children of darkness, if we are children of those who do not hold the truth, then we are in fact children of the devil. Please understand, there are not three categories. There is only two. You are either of God or not. And if you are not of God, then you are of the devil. And those of darkness live, tell, and accept the lies of Satan. Through these preceding chapters, many times repeated in these verses, John says, love one another. And if you love one another, you reveal truly who you are. And more particularly, through your love, you reveal who your Father is. But here this week, this morning, John takes this argument, this discussion, one step further. He now begins to speak of the ultimate end. What is the ultimate outcome of those who are of the darkness? What is the ultimate outcome of those who are of God? What is the ultimate end of those who love and those who do not. Those who live in darkness and those who live in the light. Those who have had the love of God lavished upon them, as we spoke of last week, and those who have not. What is the ultimate end of those actions or those natures, those people that we are? Well, here John uses two contrasts, two individuals to make his point. Cain and Jesus Christ. One represents darkness, the other light. Verse 12, I'll read again. John encourages his readers, his listeners, do not be like Cain, who belonged to the evil one and murdered his brother. And why did he murder him? Because his own actions were evil and his brother's were righteous. Why did Cain murder his brother? Why did he murder? Because he belonged to the evil one. It wasn't that he did some bad things and Satan says, oh, well, I'll go use him. No, know the origin. Know the origin. He belonged to the evil one and therefore he murdered his brother. He could not stand the light which was seen in the actions of the righteous. In this case, it was his brother Abel. Cain was a child of the devil, and so he hated. He was a child of the evil one, and so he told lies. He was envious. He was jealous. And because of this jealousy, he murdered. Because you see, murder is the ultimate end of hatred. Murder is the ultimate end to hatred. Because hatred is simply where self-love rules over love for others. Hatred is a love of self above the love of others. Cain loved himself more than he loved Abel. Cain loved his actions and thought surely God would be pleased with the offerings that he brought. But God was not. Because Cain's motive was wrong. Cain's motive was not to worship. Cain's motive was to be told how great and wonderful he was. He loved himself more than others. Cain murdered because he was acting out of his natural self. He was acting out of who he was. His nature determined his actions and it led to murder. Now, we must understand the connection. Because our sinful natures are very, very similar to that of Cain's. Our natures are similar because we are naturally inclined toward love of self. We are therefore naturally inclined towards hatred of others. Now, please understand this idea of hatred. Today we have the idea of hatred is in that if I hate somebody, then it results in some catastrophic event. Or it is only hatred if I truly show the person that I do hate them and have anger towards them and I do something to fulfill that. See, hatred has a very simple definition. And we make it larger today than it actually is. Hatred is simply a love of me over love of you. And therefore, I do not have the affection toward you that I have toward myself. And so I will abuse you. And that abuse can come in many different forms and fashions. If I continuously put me and mine and my thoughts and my beliefs, then I'm worshiping me. And that results in a non-love for another. But you say, Pastor Tim, I've never murdered anyone. So I'm not guilty of hatred. Oh, but read verse 15 with me. Anyone who hates his brother is a murderer. And you know that no murderer has eternal life in him. Hatred is murder. in Matthew 5:21. The Sermon on the Mount, we preached on this a couple of years ago. Jesus said this. He said, "You have heard it that it was said to the people long ago, do not murder. And anyone who murders will be subject to judgment. But I tell you that anyone who is angry with his brother will be subject to judgment." Jesus made it even broader. Simple anger, Jesus says, is a form. I heard the wow behind me, and that's right. Wow. Simple anger is a form of murder. Because what is anger? It comes out of an emotion of where I don't get what I want. I don't get what I think is right. I don't get it the way I want it. I'm not allowed to love me like I want to because you're standing in the way with the way you want it. And so I have anger towards you. Anger is a hatred. Hatred is a form of murder. And I have to ask the question, are we guilty of murder then? Hatred is more prevalent in our lives than you might imagine. And please understand, I am not speaking of the politically correct term that is being pressed on us today in the form of hate crimes and all of that language. That is not what I'm speaking of. I am speaking simply of the difference between self-love and love of others. But hatred is around us. For example, we here in the South are plagued with this: prejudice and bigotry. Prejudice and bigotry. It's amazing how much this sin still traps us. And it is a blatant ignorance. But what is so sad about prejudice and bigotry is that it is taught. It is a learned behavior. It is a learned behavior. Those of you who teach first grade or kindergarten, when you go out on the playground, the blacks, the whites, the Hispanics, the Orientals, the Hmongs, any subgroup of our culture, they all play together fine. They don't know the difference. They are fine. They play together. You go meet those same children when they come to the end of high school, and you hear language of hatred. You hear the language of separation. You hear the language of distinctions. The N word, the H word, honky, the white crack, you know, whatever. The language comes out. And where does that come from? It is a taught hatred that pervades our society, especially here in the South. If you teach your children to be prejudiced, meaning acting out prejudiced in front of them because they will learn what you do and then repeat it. If you are doing this in front of your children, if you're teaching prejudice against another person, you are teaching your child to hate. And therefore, according to the Bible, you are teaching your child to murder. And we are worried about gun control when this type of murder goes on all the time. John mentioned the contrast of two people. The first was Cain. Cain took life. He lived his life in hatred. The other person, of course, is Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ gives life. Jesus Christ lived his life out of love, out of sacrifice. Certainly there was no self-love in him. Even in the Garden of Gethsemane, when he prayed that prayer that he said, "Oh Lord, if this could pass," he showed his humanity. But then he quickly resulted in praying the prayer that never fails: "Oh Lord, your will be done." Meaning he totally gave out all. Verse 16. This is how we know what love is. as your teenager grows up and they say, Mom, what is love? 1 John chapter 3, verse 16. This is how we know what love is. Jesus Christ laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for our brothers. Now, here is the idea of Jesus showing true love. And John exhorts us to do the same thing. So how are we to show true love? Well, first of all, it's a total sacrifice. It is a moving, an emotional, psychological, an active movement from love of self to love of others above self. It's giving of yourself even to the point of death. Now, it's bigger than that. He's not speaking of literally giving your life for someone else, although that is called for and has been done. But here is what he is asking. Think of your life, your ambitions, your desires, your wants, your wills, everything about you. All of these things should be regarded as less important to you than any and everyone around you. Your spouse first. Well, second behind Christ. Your spouse. How many of us live sacrificially loving our spouse? Or how many of us live selfishly? Well, my wife's got her checking account, I got mine, I do my thing, she does her thing. We meet at the dinner table for a few minutes, but then I'm off doing this and she does that. I don't know. Your friends, your neighbors, your fellow Christians. John gives us an example here in verse 17. He said, if anyone has material possessions and sees his brother in need but has no pity on him, how can the love of God be in him? We are not to literally give our lives, but we are to give all our belongings. The church of the first century. We read in Acts. Tony's class just did this a couple of weeks ago. What did the people of the first century church do? They sold everything and brought it. And lived in a communal type atmosphere. That's an illustration. That's not a practice per se, but that's an illustration of the level or of the capacity of which we're supposed to give. Instead of hoarding, instead of saying, well, I got to have, I need a little more of this, I need a little more of that, I want some more of this, I got to have this. No. We have to be willing to give it all away. I had a conversation with a man in this church whose job is going well, not doing bad for himself. But he told me that he learned a few years ago a very important lesson. That all of his loans, his car, his house, his money, even his family, everything, He finally understood that it was not his. It didn't belong to him. And he repeatedly gives it away to people in need. And what's so amazing is when you stand back and watch this, when it's given away, it's quickly replaced with more. That's what it means to give. I don't think I've quite learned all of that completely. To look at everything you have in your possession as not belonging to you. It's not yours. So give it away. This is God's love action. And we here at New Sterling know something about this. There are examples and illustrations that I could go through here. I'm going to name a few, but I risk looking over something, I'm sure. We have done many things to show God's love in action. First of all, what I mentioned is the children's message, the Nitwits, the prayer group, and the Dove House, and caring for the elderly. That's a great sacrifice. Many of you women are giving an incredible amount of time to learn how to knit or crochet or whatever fashion you're doing, but also time to pray. And it's more of a prayer ministry than it is a shawl ministry. But it is done out of sacrifice. It's done out of love. The Angel House. We are making plans to build a house for this family over here. All of those plans are coming together. We've still got a few months. But there will come a time when we give all that we have toward this of our time and efforts and talents and skills. And I expect everyone in this church at some point in time or another to walk onto that property where the Angel House will build. Taking food to someone when they call. Got a phone call the other day. The lady said, I need some food. My cabinets are bare. I made one phone call. And the lady put down everything she was doing, went, bought the groceries, her and her husband, went and purchased the groceries and then took them to the lady. Fantastic. One phone call is all it took to make that happen. Because you do that. The Harlan missions trip. We are going again this year. I've been going to Harlan for over 10 years now. And can see the incredible impact of folks like you going to Harlan and giving of your time, taking your week's vacation. Now, there's sacrifice. Giving your week's vacation to go and help build a house for someone there that can't. And I'm beginning to see more and more the impact because Harlan County, which used to be the highest impoverished county in the United States, it is no longer. Because God's working there. Because you went. Other churches have gone. Miss Bernice's house in Mississippi. David and I were talking yesterday. We're going to get windows purchased and put in her house here very soon. The furniture list on the door back there is quickly filling up. Thank you so much. That's God's love in action. The 30-hour famine. The guys got together last 2 weekends ago, spent the 30 hours in fasting. They went out and did service projects. Many of you have your yards done now because of the kids who came over and done and worked there. Do you know they also raised over $2,000 to send to World Vision? Do you know what $2,000 can do in Western Africa? Tons. Reaching out to the Gotts, reaching out to the Hughes. Got word just this morning, please don't send any more clothes to the Hughes. They've got plenty. They also have an apartment now that's furnished. And so they said, thank you, but hang on. That's God's love reaching out to the people, and it impacts the people. Bonkin this week. David was telling me that there were approximately 170 people showed up at Bon Clarkin this week for work week. Largest crowd ever, I believe, in its 20-year history. Why? You'll say, well, this is Bon Clarkin. It's a retreat center. It's where the kids go play. It's where the old people go and play. Yada, yada, yada. No, it's an important place. It's a teaching center. It's a conference center. It's a retreat center. And because of the storm damage earlier in the year, there was a lot of work to do. The people responded. You responded. We had 13 from this church go. Wonderful ways. These actions reveal God's love to the people. And y'all are excellent at it. I'm a recipient of it. But there's more. There's more. This exhibition of sacrificial love that you have given also reveals your assurance. The assurance of salvation, the assurance of God's love and eternity with Him. Read with me verse 14. This verse gets a lot of writing in commentaries because it's somewhat debated, but here's my stab at it. Verse 14, we know that we have passed from death to life because we love our brothers. Anyone who does not love remains in death. Because of the work that you have shown, you have given evidence that there is a love within you. And you share that love with other people. Which means you have passed from the dominion of death. You have passed from the dominion of the grave. You have passed from the dominance of Satan in your life. And you have now passed to the realm of life. God's love in action reveals what you have been given. Because if God had not changed your heart, you would not go and do the things you do. Because you can't give away what you ain't got. And when the love of God comes in you in such a powerful way, you want to go share it. You want to go tell somebody. You want to go drop a nail. You want to go spread some leaves. You want to go, you know, do something to show that what I've got, I want you to have. And you've done that time and again. We have passed from death unto life. And so this showing of God's love in action not only helps the people of which it's directed, it also reveals who you truly are. Verse 18. Dear children, let us not love with words or tongue, but with actions. But note the qualifier, only actions. With actions and in truth. That speaks to motivation. We have plenty of people who responded to Katrina and went down and helped the folks. We had plenty of people who responded to tragedies all around. And we are thankful for those responses. But what was the actual motivation to many of them? Call Miss Bernice's daughter and ask her about a very popular celebrity who came to Mississippi and said she was going to rebuild all this stuff, and it never happened. But the cameras were there the day she showed up. What is the motivation? That we reveal God's love, but we do it out of truth. We do it with the right motivation. I want you to see Christ. I want you to be touched in such a way that you become a disciple of Christ. I want you, the one I'm helping through showing God's love, I want you to see Christ, not me. Heaven forbid, see me be nailed time and time again. But do you see Jesus Christ? Do you see the truthfulness of His Word in the work that we do? Love shown in truth is the only real love there is. And this is God's love in action. And I want to personally thank you for the many different ways that you have shown that love repeatedly. And there will be many, 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 many other opportunities to come.